This talk will be about so-called baseband attacks against cellular phones. And this is research that I actually did in 2010. It just took a while to get published. So I'll briefly give you an outline of the talk. But this also means that I can talk more openly about vulnerabilities now, because most of them have been fixed. I'll first give you an overview with the motivation of why I was doing this research. Then I'll give you an attack scenario, an intro to GSM and smartphone architectures, some market analysis that you want to do as an attacker to find out who you're going to attack. I will speak about the state of security that was in 2010 on the side of baseband stacks. I'll talk about exploitation and the impact and of this research and conclusions. Okay, so the motivation of the research was that smartphones generally have a close proximity to the user, and they store more and more data that is personally valuable to you or your company. So until 2010, the air interface to the mobile phone had been a theoretical attack vector. So people had talked about this. So for instance, Harald Welte gave a talk in 2009 about fuzzing baseband stacks. But nobody had presented any concrete bugs and anything about exploitation. And I wanted to change that. So what is the attack scenario? So GSM, that I'm not sure how many people in the room are familiar with GSM, is a 2G technology for cellular phones. And the interesting thing is that even if you use a modern 4G cellular phone, in most cases, your phone will always fall back to 2G unless you disable it. And 2G has a problem that there's no mutual authentication, so I can just come with a little black box, and I can just pretend to be AT&T or whatever, like whatever your operator is. So I could place a little black box in this room and spoof your network operator. And if I have a stronger signal than the cell of the legitimate operator, then you will connect to me. And since it's only the smartphone or the cellular phone authenticating towards the network and not the other way around, you will have no way of knowing that you're actually connected to me instead of your real network until you try placing the first call. This is like the general principle that is also used by IMSI catchers, for instance. Now, this basically is the air interface. And although people had done a lot of research into vulnerabilities of GSM on the crypto side, there had been no research on the software security phones. So let's briefly have a look at how this is layered. So GSM has different layers over this air interface. So there's the physical layer, which is layer one. And on the physical layer, you have basically modulation, demodulation, but you also have channels, different channels. For instance, like a broadcast channel or a data channel. And on layer two, you have a LAPDM, which is something that has been derived from the European ISDN. So this is basically LAPD for mobile devices, so they slightly modified this. And stacked on top of this, you have layer three, where you have things like radio resource management, you have mobility management, and you have connection management. So radio resource basically is for announcing things. Mobility management is for moving, for instance, between cells when you have handovers. And so then you have location updates. And connection management is, for instance, for calls. Actually, the layer three can be split into three sublayers. So actually, there's a typo. The last one should be SMS and not SS. So this is call control, and for structured services is the second one, and the last one is SMS. Now, I want you to keep this in mind for a bit. I can switch back. We will look at this more closely later again. Now, a brief overview of how a smartphone looks internally in a very, very simplified manner. So you have two architectures that are employed in smartphones. Because what happened around 2000, well, around the 2000 is that PDAs and cellular phones merged. So instead of having two separate devices, you started having one. And what this means now is there's two different ways of handling this. So you have the so-called application processor, which is basically the thing that drives all of your games, well, together with the GPU, mostly in modern phones. And you have a digital baseband processor. And the digital baseband processor basically is the CPU that interfaces your phone to the cellular network. And well, until 2010, many people had looked at this application processor side and found vulnerabilities there that were practically exploitable, but not a lot of people had looked at the digital baseband processor. And the architecture can be either that you have a serial communication or a shared memory. Sometimes it's a serial communication means USB as well. So for instance, if I have an iPhone 4S, there's a USB between these two things. And this is called baseband as a modem, because it's basically, it's just like a PDA where you attach a modem. And then you can have the other architecture where you have an application processor and additional baseband processor that are accessing the same memory. Now, why do they do this? Well, it's you have less things on the circuit board to worry about, and you have just one RAM chip that you need to worry about. So this is the shared memory architecture, and this is employed, for instance, by Qualcomm and by Broadcom. Now, if you have a look at what different phones use. If you look at the iPhones, they used Infineon basebands or Intel basebands. It is now because Infineon, the group for cellular stacks was bought by Intel. That was used until the iPhone 4, and now they use Qualcomm. If you look at Samsung, they use Qualcomm in the US and Intel in EU and in Asia, and some Broadcom for the low end. So HTC Android phones are mostly Qualcomm. BlackBerry's are Marvel and Qualcomm, and Windows Phone 7 is Qualcomm as well. So the initial targets I chose were iPhones. I want to have these three, so I tried attacking all of them, and an HTC Dream, which was a popular phone, it's the HTC G1 in 2009. And why I did that was because I had looked at market statistics, and these actually shifted towards my favor a little bit in 2011. In 2011, 60% of all smartphones shipped with either an Intel or a Qualcomm baseband chipset. Now, the problem with the code base of these baseband chips was that they were written in the 90s when GSM was standardized. And they also exhibited a 1990s attitude towards security. So there are a lot of length fields all over the specification. And the network elements, so basically the BTS and whatever is behind it and what is sending data, is usually trusted. So this, together with the fact that you have a lot of complex state machines driving GSM, makes a very, very nice attack surface. Moreover, exploit mitigations, when I looked at this, were almost non-existent. So there were no stack canaries, there was no heap protection, the stack was executable, except for the case of the iPhone 4, there was no ASLR. Now, the funny thing is, why did this Infineon chip have NX? So the reason for that was that people had done local baseband exploits before. These are so-called unlocks. And that's why Infineon, or Intel later, introduced an X protection, so non-executable stack, to make these harder. And of course, this made over-the-air attacks more difficult as well. OK, we're going back to the picture with the stack. So where do you look for bugs? So you have layer one, but there's not much on layer one that you can really exploit except for one thing, voice codecs. So voice codecs actually have processing functions on some stacks where you have length fields that you can mess around with. And that's just very isolated. On layer two, you have very complex state machines, but the messages that are being passed around are too short. So, well, you can find bugs there, but it'll be somewhat tricky to exploit them. However, if you look at layer three, it turns out that this is where you have many variable length messages and also a lot of complex state machines. And usually this is like a TLV or tack length value, a length value scheme in the standard. And the maximum length of messages can be up to 2^8 - 1 bytes. And this is actually solid gold. So that's where I found most of the bugs. Now, how did I find bugs? I first started with fuzzing, but that wasn't successful. So, I mean, you end up with many, many crashes, but there's no easy way to triage these because it turns out that, well, I don't have source code, so I end up with a lot of crashes, but most of these crashes turn out to be assertions where they basically intentionally crash because they're in a state that they don't want to be in. For vendors, I think fuzzing could be more successful. But what I did was then was a static analysis of the binary code. Again, this is somewhat difficult because no source code is available, so you don't know like what the stack is structured like, except for one. So there used to be an Italian company called Vitel, I think, that produced a phone, that the TSM30. And there was a source tree available. And using this source tree, so this was on SourceForge for a couple of years, and then it was removed again. And this source tree was by a German company called Condat, that was the part of the GSM stack that was used. So it was not Qualcomm or Infineon, but it allowed me to get an idea like how do people write these stacks. And it turns out they all write it in a very similar way. Basically, they use message passing and they use different threads. So my conclusion was to reverse engineer binaries. Now, where do you get binaries? So you can either like download firmware updates and unpack them, or you can use the JTAG device to dump memory. This is actually, so how I obtain my binaries is just through firmware updates, because you can do device dumps, but it's just, it's not worth the effort. Usually you can get a firmware update because they've fixed something else. You also, if none of these two things work because they have locked down JTAG and you don't have a firmware update, what you can also do is you can dump memory or flash through bugs in the AT command parser if you have them, or in the bootloader. So this, people have done this as well. It's also useful to understand what the MMU configuration is like on these devices if you have a bug in the AT command parser. So these bugs in the AT command parser are, for instance, used for iPhone unlocks. So there's some public information about these bugs that you can use to get this. So firmware updates usually contain packed binaries, but most of the time you find instructions how to unpack these as well because of these unlock people. And there are tools for iPhone and HTC phones that exist. And for Qualcomm, it's actually nice and easy. So you end up with an L file you can just throw into IDA Pro. and start analyzing. For Infineon, I had to write a custom loader that, because it's like it's a scatter loading thing that is used by their tool chain. Okay, so the next thing that you have to do if you want to attack someone is you have to identify your target. Because it turns out that there are many, many different software versions and also many, very many different devices. So if you have someone connecting to you, you might want to figure out like what phone is he using. Turns out there's a very easy way to do this, namely if somebody connects to you, you can query the so-called IMEISV. And this is basically the type approval code which can be mapped back to the device, plus a serial number, plus a software version. So if you connect to my base station and I query your IMEISV, I can take this IMEISV, can take the 8-digit type approval code, I can go to a web interface and map this back to the type of your phone, and then I can look at the last 2 digits to figure out what software version you're running. And although this official database is not published, there are a number of carriers that give you a web interface to determine compatibility of your phone. Also, there's, for instance, Colin Molnar, who has compiled a database of type approval codes. Okay, now you've identified your target, you know what version they're running, you'll get back to reverse engineering. So if you try to do this, IDAPRO is mandatory. I mean, you can try this with open source tools, but you don't get very far. How I did this is I bootstrapped by porting symbols from the compiler runtime and for Infineon from an operating system dev trial using bindiff. And then I used scripts for identifying memory transfers in RHEL, which is the reverse engineering intermediate language in Binavi. And the nice thing about this is these stacks contain very many error messages and assertions. And this means that you can figure out where you are in the code path very easily. Moreover, you have very clean-cut regions for the different layers. So you can figure out, okay, well, from hex address this to hex address that, I'm in the radio resource control, then here's the mobility management, here's the ATE command parser, and you can start reading these things and try to figure out how the code is processing your messages. That way you can identify the functions that handle GSM frames. But the problem now is that you usually have different tasks that handle the GSM frames in order. So you have message passing between them. And this is actually the hardest part of the whole thing. But for this, assertions and logging turn out to be useful as well. So you do not need to fully reverse this. Also, what I found out at a late stage in this research was a decompiler is very helpful. So this can speed up your work a lot. So the type of bugs I found were mostly of these four types. So there were a lot of unchecked memory copies. So they basically copied into buffers of standards, stack buffer overflow, heap buffer overflow, without checking the length. Then there were object and structure lifecycle issues, so use after freeze, uninitialized variables, and confusions of the state engine. But these are hard to exploit usually. And you have integer overflows and mostly underflows. And you have a number of information leaks. So I'll give you two examples that I then also disclosed to the vendors. So this was a very nice example in the Qualcomm stack. So in GSM and in UMTS, you have this challenge response authentication. And in GSM, there is a 16-byte RAND that is sent from the network to the phone for authentication. And what they did in 3G is they sent a variable length challenge, which they later specified to be always 16 bytes. So they encode this as a TLV, but it's always 16 bytes. And this results in a very easy stack buffer overflow because apparently one guy read the part of the specification where it says variable length, and the other said, well, okay, there's a 16-byte buffer here. And this is fixed in all recent firmwares. But this is a very nice pre-auth. So you just have someone connecting to you, and you send like one message with approximately 70 something bytes, and you own the phone. For the Kalmnian stack, there was something, a very similar low-hanging fruit. So this didn't work there, but they have TIMZ allocations and reallocations. And again, same thing. TIMZ always is 32 bits, but they encode it as text length value. And this results in a heap buffer overflow, but sometimes you can convert this into a stack buffer overflow. So when I originally did this, it was a heap buffer overflow for me, but I later realized, okay, I can turn this into a stack buffer overflow as well. This is fixed as well. So how do you go about exploitation? The problem is that, as I said, there is not a lot of public info about the stack, but there is some info about the operating systems that they use. For instance, for iPhones, for the old iPhones, they use Nucleus and ThreadX. And for this, you can find developer trials, so you can figure out what the operating system looks like. For Qualcomm, they use Rex and OKL4, so OKL4 is a microkernel. That's nice because you can get the source code for this as well. And for Rex, there are leaked documents describing how this works as well. Then you locate the buffers for your L3 messages, and you can either write custom code or if you just want to demonstrate the exploitability, what I did was I used the so-called ATS0 handler. And with this, I was able to demonstrate exploitation without writing my code. I'll talk about this on one of the next slides. Debugging, unfortunately, is really hard unless you have JTAG, which I didn't realize I had initially. So it should be locked down on most phones, but on some phones, it's not locked down as tight as it should be. And what I recommend doing is like write your own debugger if you wanted to do this. What I did was I used the core dump features that was available on phones. Most phones have these. So just two things. My personal preference for exploitation is OpenBTS because this is like hardware for $1,500. So this actually has been a game changer. Before you had to buy like your own, if you want to buy your own BTS, you're looking at costs of upwards of $25,000 even if you bought something used. It has a test call command, so you can just inject messages over UDP into this. And an alternative to this is OpenBSC, which has been available for, I think, the last 3 years. And with this, you can actually use like old Siemens BTSs or these IP access nano BTSs. In the iOS Hackers Handbook, I actually put a VirtualBox image for experimentation in there. So you can just download this and use it with the USRP1. OK, I have 5 more minutes and no battery, sorry. So I will quickly speak about this ATS0 feature a little bit more. And if you want, I can give you a demo if I can go. Sorry. So the nice thing about this, what the hell? OK. So the nice thing about this is it's mandatory for all phones according to this GSM 707 standard. You can enable and disable it for testing on iPhones using this key code, and it's an excellent target to demonstrate the memory corruptions because you can just return I refuse to call this ROP, it's just return into libc into this handler to set this register to 1, and then you have order answer. And I will now give you a brief demo for this, if I can. So here's two phones, and this is an a USRP. And what I just do, these two phones are connected to this USRP. This is my Mallory install. And I just write I have written a small Python script that will just send a single message to this iPhone. And this will make parts of the stack crash and come back. And then after that, the auto answer will be set. And I can just call from the other phone. So now this this thread has crashed, and it'll come back briefly thereafter. And what will happen then is basically, because of the auto answer feature, the person doesn't have to pick up the phone to answer. So after that, you can basically monitor the surroundings of the device. Okay, it should come back. Okay, now I call from the other phone. So it rings once and it picks up without the user doing anything. Okay, back to the last 2 minutes. Hello? Okay, as you see, there's a problem with privacy if you do this. You can create billing problems, and it's very hard for both the carriers and the users to defend against this. If you have shared memory between the baseband and the application processor, it can also result in the complete compromise of the phone, so you can escalate to the other side. I'll skip over this. Conclusions are you can do memory corruptions over the air interface using cheap hardware in a practical way. The vulnerabilities that I originally found were plentiful and very shallow, but the vendors were responsive to these issues. That's a good thing. So many of these vulnerabilities have been fixed now. And there's a good thing and a bad thing about a small number of vendors. The good thing is that if you have a small number of people to talk to get everything fixed. But the other thing is that the bug bounty can be very powerful because they can be used against many different devices. And what I've shown you with this is running malicious code on the baseband CPU allows you both the privacy and the security of the user. Okay, and with this, I will close.